Welcome to Steppin' Out, the 12-step meeting on the air. Tonight you'll meet real people with true stories of addiction and recovery. And now, Steppin' Out.
Hello and welcome to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew and this is Steppin' Out. Feature is on young people in recovery, and right now to share their experience, strength, and hope with us, I have our first guest, Mike. Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
How are you? What happened?
Well, I grew up in New Jersey, and I started to drink when I was about 12 or 13 years old, like a lot of people did, and, you know, getting into high school and stuff like that. And the reason why I was doing it was just because my friends were doing it. You know, I didn't really think much of it. You know, I didn't do a whole lot. I didn't do any sports or anything like that. So I just was hanging out with these, you know, derelicts, and I just did what they did. I know we'd go skateboarding and we'd go drinking, you know. And there's a lot of drugs in my story because it was much easier for me to get drugs than it was to get alcohol, you know, until I learned how to steal it. And I don't know, like the first time that I got drunk, I didn't think anything of it, you know, but looking back on it, I realized that I thought about drinking a lot after that, you know. I kept thinking, like, when's the next time I can get something, you know, when's the next time I could drink, when's the next time I could get some drugs or whatever. And you know, the time between those thoughts, you know, got really short, and it became this huge obsession of mine where I needed to get something, you know, because I don't know, because like I just took to it like that. And you know, I had a lot of very strange experiences with alcohol during my drinking career. I lost a lot of friends.
Well, how so? I mean,
car accidents mostly, yeah. Stuff like that. Wow. Some ODs, things, you know, things of that nature. And you know, I was a garbage head, and I drank all the time, and I did drugs all the time. And if I wasn't doing drugs all the time, you know, I was drinking all the time. And if I wasn't drinking all the time, I was doing drugs all the time, because it didn't occur to me that, you know, that one was related to the other, and that, you know, if I was drinking this week and trying not to do heroin, that next week, you know, maybe I would be thinking I had a drinking problem.
Well, were you drinking to not get high, and were you getting high to not drink? Were you trying to play against each other?
Yeah. Yeah, I was playing two against each other.
Okay.
You know? And probably by the time I was like 17 or about then, I started to use heroin on a daily basis, and I...
Are you saying also that it was easier for you to get dope than it was to get booze?
Yeah, because where I was at, you know, I had a car, and I had like three major cities nearby, and it was...
That's amazing.
Yeah, you know, short drive.
Yeah.
you know, I know that was there, and like I always drank and used drugs for the effect of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't think much of it. You know, I guess, like, you know, looking back on it, that I was drinking and doing drugs to you know, deal with my feelings of myself and things like that. But at the time, it just seemed like, you know, that's what I kind of had to do, and that's what I did. And I went to a detox, and I told them that I was drinking because, like, I guess my family had gotten worried about me or something, because I always blacked out and I was extremely violent. And you know, you never knew, you know, I wasn't like one of those guys who got drunk and got loud. Like, I was one of those guys who got drunk and got quiet, you know, and like if you came near me, I might do something bad, you know.
Did you always act out physically? Like,
yeah, usually, I mean, in some way or another, you know, like I crashed a lot of cars, I got in a lot of fights, you know, and spent a lot of time alone. Yeah, I went to a detox, and I didn't tell them about my drug problem, and I told them about my drinking problem. And when I got out, I drank, you know. And of course, they're like, "Don't drink again." And I was like, "Okay." And I got out and I drank, and like I never intended to do, you know, I didn't intend to stop drinking, you know, and I certainly didn't intend to stop doing drugs, you know. I didn't even tell them about that. And I was just working, like I was going to high school, you know, and I graduated high school barely. And then I started going to a community college, and like I could barely keep a job. I could barely go to class. You know, I dropped out a couple times of that school and went back, and my life was just really, really a mess, you know. But I didn't, like, all I knew is that I needed to get more, you know. Like, I didn't know that like my life was as insane as it was, or that I was as out of control as I was. I just thought, like, this is what I should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up back in an outpatient program, and you know, I went from a detox. There was like an outpatient thing, and I just thought I was crazy, you know. I totally thought I was insane, and so did everybody else. And you know, I was insane, yeah, but I was insane because of my alcohol and drug abuse, you know, like really psychotic. Like, I would do speed and stay up for like days and days at a time and become psychotic. And I would do like too much, you know, drinking, and I'd black out, and it was very like dramatic and probably very stressful for my family. Who,
you think?
Yeah. You know, they don't hate me anymore, I don't think, but they did. And I kept on going in and out of treatment, and, you know, and like I started getting in trouble with the law. So I like one time I got arrested for, I crashed a car, you know, I OD'd actually and crashed a car, and I got arrested for that. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to go back to my outpatient program, and I'm really going to stop doing all this now. And I really tried, you know, I tried for 30 days, and I went to a couple AA meetings, and I was like, these people are old, you know, I'm not an alcoholic, this isn't for me. And I couldn't do it. Like, I could do it for, like, maybe 20 days, but I wasn't even really doing it. Like, I'm kidding myself even saying that. Like, I was still doing drugs and drinking. I just, you know, I was pretending like I wasn't. And
how'd that work out?
Yeah, it was working out very good. You know, obviously that didn't work. And, you know, so it got worse and it got worse and worse. And it seemed like every time that I drank, I would get in trouble with the law, you know. And, like, from that first arrest, I got offered pretrial intervention.
What's pretrial intervention?
It's like if you, for your first offense, if you complete this program, then you don't get any charges.
Okay.
You know, you do this, like, probation or whatever, and then they don't, like, convict you.
Gotcha.
So I was supposed to, you know, I was enrolled to, get that. And I, like, a month, you know, like 20 days or something had gone by, and I went to the same spot, you know. And I did the same thing again, and I crashed another car in sort of a blackout on a relapse.
How many cars are we crashing now? I mean,
that was two. I crashed three. You know,
yeah, okay,
just two.
I mean, were you noticing that, like, maybe there's a, you know, maybe it was just, you know, more than just bad luck? You know?
Yeah, I knew pretty well that it was like becoming a problem. You know, I mean it was obviously already a problem, but it had occurred to me that maybe I had a drinking problem. So I crashed the second car and I got arrested, and I had to stay in jail for a few days, and I had to, like, post bail, and I was sick, you know, like I was detoxing in jail by myself in a little room, you know.
You were dope sick.
Yeah. And I was like, I was a mess, you know, and I don't remember how many days it was. Like, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't do anything. I wouldn't eat, you know, and I didn't even know what I did, but I remember I looked out the window of the little cell, and this lady was reading the newspaper, and there was a picture of the car that I had wrecked on it. And I was like, oh,
that's bad.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, like, it was really bad. And, like, towards the end of my drinking and all that, I was trying to kill myself actively, you know. And, like, there's a lot of things. Like, I had, you know, access to weapons, so I would often have one in my possession, and I would be, like, wanting to kill myself or somebody or anything.
Oh, why'd you have access to weapons? What was that all about?
Well, I grew up in rural New Jersey, so a lot of people had hunting rifles and stuff like that, and
okay,
people didn't lock their doors.
So I'm thinking, like, the suburbs, like, you know, like, what's that all?
I mean, yeah, it was a rural suburb, okay. So, I mean, it's much more of a regular suburb now than it used to be, but there was a lot of farms and stuff out mm-hmm. there. And, you know, I mean, so I had access to things like that. I had access to, you know, lethal narcotics that I was intentionally overdosing on occasionally. And, you know, the last time I crashed the car, I ran from the cops, and they all chased me, you know, down the highway, and I was in the brownout, and there was like 100 cop cars, and probably not 100, but, you know, there was like in every mirror and all over the place, and there was no other cars on the road except for me and them. And I it was my mom's car. So I decided I would drive it into the median as fast as I could. And I did that, and I got all banged up and everything, and skidded across the road. I hit a telephone pole, and there was all these angry cops with guns and stuff. And, like, the worst thing that happened to me was that, like, my glasses fell off. You know, like, nothing happened. I didn't get hurt. I saw a picture of the car, and the driver's side of the car was, like, smashed. It looked like a half a car, you know?
Wow.
So that was the time I went to jail, and I was sick in jail and everything. And I posted the bail for that, and I messed up my pretrial intervention pretty good. And I bargained with my parents. I was like, come on, if you let me get my money so that I can pay, you know, this bail, I'll go to an inpatient treatment. And I did that. You know, I went to inpatient treatment, and I got out, and I drank, and then I went back to inpatient treatment. And I was like, please send me to a halfway house. You know, it'll be great. And I was thinking, yeah, I'll go to the Jersey Shore or something, and it'll be fun, you know. Like,
what, you think it was like a beach house or something?
There was. It was a beach house, and I thought I'd go to it. But I ended up in Elizabeth, New Jersey.
Okay.
Which is, like, you know.
Not the Jersey Shore.
It's not the Jersey Shore. Port Newark.
Yeah, lovely.
And it was like, it was a dope spot, you know. Like, I was literally right around the corner from a dope spot. And basically all my housemates were wards of the state who were state prisoners and out on this release program, you know, where they had to get breathalyzers every day and all that. And there was 30 of us living in a house trying to get sober, and it was really tough.
I bet. Mike, hold that thought. We're going to be back in one sec. This is America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Stepping Out. And welcome back. This is America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Stepping Out. And before the break, we were talking with Mike I don't know, Mike, you smacked up like 6 million cars. You live to tell about it. You must be here for some reason, man. What's next?
Anyways, I was living in this this halfway house in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And there was a dope spot right around the corner. So I went through all this. I got in all this trouble, and I got, you know, I did so much damage to all my relationships and like the feelings that the people had, you know, who I was in those relationships with, and I I'm an alcoholic, I'm a drug addict, and like I need to do drugs, you know, I need to drink, and that dope spot, I mean, like the whole town really was a dope spot, but like the dope spot being right there and all, I would find myself being like, yeah, you should go this way to where you got to go and just see what's going on, you know? And like, I started like walking through the people, places and things basically, you know? And you know, it was only a matter of time before I picked up again while I was in this house. Now I was in this house, and if I finished the program, I didn't go to jail. Right. Or at least the prosecutor would suggest that I didn't go to jail. And if I messed up the program, I definitely went to jail. And I mean, I definitely messed up the program, but I didn't get caught, you know. Even though every time that I got drugs, which was like a few times, maybe 3 or 4 times, the first month I was in this halfway house. And every time I picked up, there was a, like the cops would somehow be there, and you know, it was totally insane that I never got caught. Like I had drugs on me in a school zone, and there was cops looking in my pockets, and they didn't find it for some reason, you know. Excuse me. And you know, that kind of stuff was happening all the time. Like whenever I picked up, that's what would happen. I would get, there would be cops, you know. And so one time I'm in the halfway house and I'm getting drugs, and I'm walking back to the halfway house because I got to clean it every night. And I'm walking back, and I'm near an ice cream truck, and the cops are pulling up. So I drop these drugs on the ground, and there's an ice cream truck there. And I was like, oh, I'm just getting an ice cream. I live nearby, you know. And, you know, I basically look like a fish out of water there. And I got back to the house, and all I could think about was, I've got to go back and get those bags that I dropped on the street, you know. And that was all I could think about. And I was in this halfway house where people were really trying to get sober, and I was supposed to be trying to get sober. And it was like, you know, it was my problem if I got caught. And like, you know, and then for like a second, I just realized how totally insane I was, you know, what happened was I realized that I was going to die if I kept doing it, you know, and that, you know, even though sometimes I thought I wanted to die, like I actually didn't. And I realized how powerless and hopeless the whole situation was, and how, like, you know, totally, you know, whatever, how beat I was. And it was really powerful, you know, it moved me. And all of a sudden, you know, I mean, I was like, the second time that I went to the rehab, I started to, you know, try to believe in some kind of higher power, and all I did was ask for willingness. And for whatever reason, I didn't get it till like, you know, a couple months later. But that's cool, you know, that's how it goes, and I don't need to figure that stuff out. And suddenly I realized the situation for a second. You know, I didn't even really like understand it. I just for a second realized it, and then I was able to. Then I suddenly was able to find the willingness to do what was suggested to me, which was really simple, you know, which was like, you know, like what Alan was saying, you know, like go to meetings and get a sponsor and do those things, you know. And I thought, well, if I stop doing this, like, you know, like we heard before, that I won't have a life. There'll be nothing for me to do. I was 19, you know. I was 19, and that was like 5 years ago. And what do you do when you're 19, you know, and you're sober, and you live in the middle of nowhere? You know.
What do you do?
You move. You move to New York.
Okay.
And that's what I did, you know. Like, I got sober, and I came... I came to New York. I went to school. I did a lot of things that I never even wanted to do.
Like what?
Like I went to school, you know, and I ended up doing this work that I'm interested in and that I find enjoyable. And like, I don't know. I mean, what I wanted to do when I wanted to get sober and I lived in Elizabeth, what I wanted to do for the rest of my life was unload boxes from a truck in Edison, New Jersey. And, you know, my life is definitely beyond like what I could have wanted for myself. You know, I couldn't have planned this whole thing any better. Like, it just kind of unfolded in front of me. And there was a choice. Like, I could have done this or I could have done that. And I don't take any credit for it. You know, it wasn't me. I didn't do it, you know. And it's just been, like, really amazing. And it's not always amazing, you know. It's like, because, like, you know, in my sobriety, like, I have feelings. And, like, you know, sometimes I feel really great and I'm like, amazed by the whole process. And sometimes I'm really bored and I'm like, this is terrible. But, like, I just don't drink. I go to meetings. There's tons of young people in sobriety in New York City. And, you know. And even, you know, in the surrounding areas, I'm sure, like, my experience is there's quite a bit in, you know, in New Jersey and elsewhere, because they come here and we go there and, you know. So, like, in my life now, like, I thought I would, you know, have to do nothing and just while away the hours, like, staring at my shoes and things like that. And I don't ever have time. You know, my life is very full. I don't often have time to do some of the things even that I want to do.
Well, what's it full with today?
It's full with, like, you know.
No, you said school, but what else?
Yeah, not really school, but like relationships that I have with other people that, you know, require a great deal of attention. You know, it's hard to, like, be a friend and have a friend and or a girlfriend or, like, have relationships with people in a business and, you know, work. You know, I take care of myself physically. I go to the gym, you know, I do a lot of things that just occupy my time. And it's not like I'm wasting time. You know, it's like, this is stuff that, that I just do now that I never thought I would do. And, you know, I go out a lot, you know, I go out to a lot of, like, music things and stuff like that. And, you know, I thought at some point, like, I'd never be able to go around any drugs or alcohol ever again. And, like, the truth is, like, I'm always around drugs and alcohol because, you know, like, because other people drink and do drugs, you know, and I'm powerless over that. And, like, to think that I could live in a little bubble someplace and just hide from all that stuff, that's not what being sober is about. You know, like, being sober is about being able to accept and live in the world that's around you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, like, trying to hide from it or, like, change it or anything like that, you know? And that's just been one of the benefits of my sobriety, you know, and being young is that I'm there, you know, and like I'm there at these things where maybe some people who are sober wouldn't feel comfortable being, but like I've had people come from those environments with me to meetings, you know, and think like, whoa, if this guy can be sober and not be like bored to tears, then maybe I could. And like, you know, I mean, that doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, I mean, that's pretty cool, you know, because, like, being sober isn't that boring, you know.
It doesn't sound that way.
Getting drunk every day and being a slave to some drug, you know, or being a slave to alcohol is pretty boring, you know. I mean, because you got to do so much bad things to, like, you know. It's hard for me to talk without cursing.
You're doing great, Mike. You're doing great.
Yeah.
Hey, what do you want to say to young people who are wrestling with, you know, what do I do now? You know, like they can't see, you know, getting high. They can't see, you know, not getting high. I mean, what do you tell somebody like that who's, you know, having a hard time, doesn't, you know, is afraid to come to meetings, you know? I mean, what do you want to say to the guy that's still struggling out there today, the young person?
Well, I used to take this meeting to a detox, and I always, like, you know, I always tried to say the same thing, you know, which is basically, like, I went to a lot of institutions thinking that they were going to fix me and make me, you know, they were going to rehabilitate me. And that when I got out, I would be normal and probably I could drink a little bit or something or, like, you know, or something like that. But, like, the truth is, like, I went to all those institutions and they didn't do anything but try to put me on AA's doorstep. And, like, that's where I'm at, you know. Like, I go to AA meetings And that's, you know, how I got and how I stay sober. And it's really like, it's that easy, you know. I mean, it's hard, but it's that easy. It's that simple.
Right, right, right. And that's the thing, I think, you know, a lot of people go to the rehabs and stuff, and then the main thing is when they get out, it's like the people who stay sober are the ones that generally make it to the meetings, you know.
Yeah.
So thanks so much for sharing your experience with us. This is America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out.